comicbook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Friday, December 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 90 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for this final show of 2016. A few things I want to say here before we get into today's two segments, which are, of course, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment with myself and Cole Ryan, but also the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. But this has been a really monumental year for us here at bangthebook.com and specifically on Bang the Book Radio. We started doing this daily format every day last year in November. We started about the middle of the month or so. And, you know, we've been extremely lucky, very fortunate to get some of the guests that we've had here on the show. You know, we've got some really great handicappers that join us. And, you know, it's all because of you. It's all because of the listeners. And hopefully we've been able to help you have your most profitable 2016 yet from a betting standpoint. Hopefully you've been able to take some of the things that we've suggested, some of the things that our handicappers have tipped for you, and really build your bankrolls. And most importantly, you know, learn how to be a better handicapper. A lot of us aren't betting life-changing money or anything like that on these games. You know, it's something that we enjoy doing. It's something that we want to get better at. It's something that gives us some incentive to watch a game that we maybe wouldn't care about otherwise. Or, you know, for some people as well, it's just something that sort of fuels that competitive fire, something that can kind of scratch that itch that we have. And so our goal is always on this show to educate and inform. You know, that's why I've selected the pro handicappers that I have for this show. I don't want anybody that's going to be an over-the-top salesman. I want somebody that's going to help you get better at this and maybe give you some free pick winners along the way. So hopefully we've achieved everything that we set out to do here with this radio show in 2016. Certainly expecting bigger and better things as we continue to grow for 2017. But I do want to wish all of our listeners out there the happiest of New Year's. I know for a lot of people, 2016 has been a very tough year. Fortunately for me, and I'll knock on wood, of course, with a couple days left here in the year, you know, things have gone well for me in 2016. No real big complaints from me. I've gotten to see and do a lot of things. It's been a whole lot of fun. I've gotten to really grow some relationships, both from this show and then also, you know, in my personal life as well. And it's been really fantastic. But, you know, so maybe some of you haven't had the best of years. Maybe some of you had fantastic years. Maybe you've had kids. Maybe you've gotten married. Maybe you've gotten promotions, new jobs, whatever the case may be. You know, it's all a matter of perspective here as we head into the new year. And again, I don't want to get on a soapbox about this, but I do want to implore our listeners out there, if you're going out for New Year's, if you're going out to watch the semifinal games or just going out to have fun with family and friends, whatever the case may be, designate a driver, use Uber, use Lyft, take a cab. Don't kill yourself or somebody else with a stupid decision to drive drunk. So that's all I'm going to say about it. But, you know, just want to make sure that all of our listeners out there do enjoy themselves, but enjoy themselves responsibly. So as I said, we've got two segments left here in 2016, our Westgate Super Contest Selection segment, myself and Cole Ryan, the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Two good segments here. I think it's a very good way to wrap up the 2016 calendar year. So without further ado, here's our Week 17 Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. All right, I'm joined now by Cole Ryan for our Week 17 Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. Cole, how's it going, my friend?
It is as good as it could possibly be, which is mean very good because it is a holiday week, a lot of bowl games going on, big NFL schedule this week, the playoffs are around the corner, so absolutely fantastic. Excited to be here today and ready to go.
Well, we're definitely hoping to finish this thing up on a high note here because obviously things have not played out the way that we were hoping for in the Super Contest. 37, 41, and 2 on the season, 38 points for us. Not where we wanted to be, but as we kind of talked about a little bit on Wednesday and as we've talked about here on recent Super Contest segments, there's been a learning curve to this season. It's only our second year in the Super Contest. So you find out some things. You sort of have to balance two different handicapping styles. And, you know, hey, I mean, all I can say, Cole, is that, you know, it's been a pleasure to work with you. It's been a joy. And, you know, hopefully things go better in the future for both of us.
Yeah, absolutely no regrets. No regrets. I mean, obviously, I would have loved to have gone perfect and won the thing, but no regrets as far as how we tackled it, when we went after. And we've said this time and time again, easily the most difficult handicapping contest, at least that I know of. And if you looked at the standings, even the last month, where teams or players or individuals who are doing very, very well struggle to keep that up. So there were people that were in the money or close to being in the money, and even they fell by the wayside because it is a constant grind. It is a constant game of wills or strategy, if you will, or contest of wills, trying to not only pick winners, but at this point in the season, trying to see what everybody else is doing because now you're competing to just for placement. So a lot going on each and every week, and it's been a pleasure tackling it. Getting no regrets outside, of course, not winning, but I love it. Can't wait to do it next year. I'll be in it again next year, so I'm all excited. I'm ready to go.
Well, and you mentioned the standings here, and those are very interesting. Orange Crush with a 1.5-point lead over Greybeard. Orange Crush has 52.5 points. Monday Night Football wound up being a big swing game because Orange Crush was on the right side there in that one to open up that 1.5-point lead. Only entry with a chance at the 67% bonus. You get an additional bonus. I believe it's $20,000 for the entries that are over 67%. That is the only one with a chance to do that. Greybeard in second with an additional 3 points with 6 pushes. I think there's only 7 pushes in the contest for the whole season, and that entry has had 6 of them. B-Nev, higher percentage with 51 points. Higher percentage with 51 points coming out of a 5-0 last week. But B-Nev and Greybeard, both 51 points. 9 entries with 50.5, 1 entry with 50, 8 entries with 49.5, 7 with 49, 10 entries with 48.5 points. Anything can happen here during the final week of the Super Contest. In the mini contest, there are 2 entries that are 9-0-1. There are, 3 entries here that are 9-1. So, you know, lots of stuff going on here, obviously, with everything that's playing out late in the Super Contest and the mini contest as well. Last week, 48% for the field, now below 50% for the season at 49.99%. Spread of about 40 picks or so, with more losers than winners. But, you know, this is a week, and you and I talked about this on Wednesday's show when we were trying to break down this Week 17 card. Man, there are a lot of hard things to try and decipher for this week.
Well, you know, you mentioned it with this contest. This is the kind of week that is really going to make or break some people, whether in the money. I mean, you listed off a buttload, for lack of a better term, of teams that are within a half game of one another, and so they're going to be looking to make up that game. I'd love to be on a fly on the wall for the two guys that are fight for the top spot and exactly how they're going to go about it this week, because you would figure they want to do exactly what they've been doing all year long because it's gotten them to where they're at. However, as you just mentioned, this week is so different than any other week. I talked about it with you before we went on the air here, is that it could be one of the hardest weeks to handicap. And I'll relate it to fantasy football. A lot of leagues that I know of put their championship game for last week because they know this week you're going to be missing a lot of big players. I mean, Big Ben's already said he's not going to play, and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. And, I mean, we got some big names that either won't be playing, or we got teams that are looking to go to the future and play younger players. So there's a lot of angles every week, and there's a lot of things you have to break down this week, probably more than all season long. And that's why you and I, we're looking for any bit of motivation to be on the right side. And that is exactly what the people have to do when they're handicapping this week of football.
You know, I had Brad Powers on the show on Thursday, and he mentioned to me that the people that he talks to out in Las Vegas actually have quite a bit of NFL action here this week. And in some respects, I get it. I mean, we sort of talked about it on Wednesday's show where this is a lot like a preseason week where coaches are going to tell you this is going to happen, this player is going to play, this player is not going to play, we want to work on this, we want to do that. And you can gain a lot of really valuable handicapping insight from there. So I guess I wasn't as surprised as I initially thought I would be to hear that. But then as I start looking through the card and as I start digging for information, and we did talk about this a little bit off the air, I still feel like to some extent I'm just throwing darts this week and hoping for the best.
Well, and that's because you don't know what's going to happen. And what I mean by that is not only do you have to try to figure out what teams are playing for, but you have to figure out where players are playing for. And I mentioned it when we talked about the Bills earlier in the week, you don't know what they're going to do. They already have a new coach in place. I don't want to say new coaching staff because he was on the staff the entire time. So the player's going to play hard for this coach. What's this coach going to try to do? Is he going to try to use this one game to make a statement of why he should be the head coach? And, oh, by the way, are they going to put in a whole new game plan? You would think no, because they don't have a lot of time. But at the same time, they're bringing in a new quarterback. So now you have new coach, new quarterback, motivation level. Is it up or down? I mean, that's just one game that I'm talking about. Switch gears and go to a team like the Dallas Cowboys. No reason to play this week. They definitely don't want to have it be a Raiders situation where you lose arguably your best player and then all of a sudden go from the team that could win the Super Bowl to a team who could struggle in the playoffs. So you have to figure out what kind of balance they are going to participate in when it comes to the starters. Are they going to play them a little bit, some of the game, all the game? They've already announced offensive linemen will be out. So now you have to dig in the trenches, see what offensive linemen will or will not be playing, because that can make the difference. And to me, that is just a few of the reasons why this is the most difficult week of the year to handicap.
Well, we're going to still try and finish this thing up strong. We'd need a 5-0 to put ourselves over 500 for this week, for this season. So hopefully that'll be the case. You know, it would almost be laughable to some extent to get a 5-0 here this week after, you know, the season that we've had and some of the times where we've really liked the card and done poorly and where we've hated the card and done well. You know, it's just been one of those things where things haven't fully lined up for us each and every week. But we do have four of our five plays that we like here so far. And, you know, we talked about some of these games on Wednesday's segment and you know, maybe it's not just coincidence that, you know, those are the ones we picked because there are some implications there in those games. But the first game I guess we'll touch on here, not one that we've talked about yet this week, is the Chicago Bears. They're a 5-point underdog against the Minnesota Vikings. And this is a Vikings team that's been through a lot this season, obviously, as we know. Offensive coordinator Norv Turner left. Teddy Bridgewater was done for the season. Adrian Peterson missed a significant chunk of the season. Sam Bradford can't throw a ball more than 10 yards downfield. You know, Mike Zimmer has had some issues and some concerns here this year. So for Minnesota, I just look at a game like this where you're playing a Bears team that's 3-12, nothing to play for, even though they've been playing hard here recently. I just don't see how Minnesota gets up for this game.
No, and I think that's what it comes down to. I think when you get to a point of the season, it's kind of enough is enough kind of scenario. It's obvious that the Vikings, like the Bears, mind you, have nothing to play for, but they've had so much go on this year. And to me, there's a big difference trying to finish strong, you know, when you're a mediocre team or a bad team because you want to show that you have something for the future, or when you're a team like the Vikings who expected maybe to even be in the Super Bowl, and now they're not even going to make the playoffs. They know they'll be a good team again next year because they'll be healthier and their defense is already good. So I kind of think this is the situation where this team definitely looks forward to next year. And maybe they don't have much to play for. Look, the Bears, on the other hand, they don't have a lot to play for either. But this is a team that has young players, and they're still trying to build something. You can get the argument for this Bears coaching staff, which you and I talk about all the time as being one of the better ones, although they had a bad season. Having such a bad season because all they had was injuries on offense and defense. But in their first meeting, Vikings were still in contention, and the Bears won that game. Jordan Howard, he was just started his great rookie season, 153 yards in that game. And since week 8, Howard has had 6 100-yard combined efforts, 3 games at or over 100 rushing yards, and the Vikings just ranked 15th in the league by giving up 101.9 yards per game. This, to me, is a team that thrives off the defense. You and I have talked about it, and they're just not their same defensive self. They're not aggressive. They don't seem to have that mindset where the defense can carry the offense. Plus, you mentioned that the latest discrepancy, if you will, in this locker room is that Zimmer and his cornerbacks, his veteran cornerbacks, by the way, were not on the same page. They were going rogue as far as the play calling is concerned and switching coverages, one-on-one coverages, which left this defense very vulnerable. So to me, this is a young Bears team who are used to not playing for anything over the last few weeks, and they're still playing somewhat decent outside of turnovers against the Vikings team, who's just more than happy to let this season end, and that's why I'm on the Bears.
Yeah, and I realize we're going against some line movement here. The sharp players do like this Minnesota side here in this one with the numbers sitting around 6.5. It was as low as 5 when the Super Contest lines came out, and unfortunately that's the line that we'll be getting here. But couple things. One, the basically mutiny from the Minnesota defense last week is something that really, really stands out to me. That's something that's seriously problematic. I mean, again, this is a team that started the season 5-0. They're now 7-8. So this is a team that over a long stretch of football has not played well. On the Chicago side, you know, you have a guy here in Matt Barkley who he's not going to be the starting quarterback for the Bears next year, I wouldn't think. But he's playing for a job. If they do bring in a new starting quarterback, which, you know, it certainly seems like they will, or maybe they do decide to do something with Jay Cutler. I don't really know what the case will be. But the Bears probably want to bring back Brian Hoyer. I mean, he's a guy that has a relationship with Dowell Loggins. Connor Shaw also has one, and he's missed the whole season with an injury. So if you're Matt Barkley, you're out there playing for a job, and you just threw five picks last week. So obviously there's some extra incentive from you to go out there and have a strong game. You know, this Bears team has not lacked effort over the last several weeks. Last week they just were way behind in the turnover margin, and what happened. Prior to that, played very well against the Packers at home, played very tough against the Lions on the road, beat the 49ers in a game that nobody really wanted to play in. So this is a team that's not just playing out the string here, even though they have every reason in the world to do exactly that. I think they play hard for John Fox here in this one. I think they want him to come back. Fox and Fangio have sort of, you know, thrown some cold water on some of the burning fires that the media was trying to set with them. I just think this is a Bears team that says, look, you know, it's the last time a lot of us are going to play together. Let's just go out there and play the game. There's not going to be sweeping changes for Minnesota in the offseason. For Chicago, there very well could be. I know they're banged up on defense. I know they have issues there. But from a purely effort-level standpoint, I think Chicago wants to win this game, and I just don't know if Minnesota, despite the chance of going 8-8, has that same motivation.
Well, first of all, mutiny is a perfect word. I'm glad you used it, because that's something you don't want to have in any situation, especially in the best unit on the team, and that's exactly what this is, and especially with a defensive mind like Zimmer, who's not only defensive-minded but very stern. It's interesting how it's all going to play out, because like I said, it was veteran defensive players that did this, so it wasn't just a rookie doing something on his own. So to me, that's a big deal. Now, on the other side, you brought up Fox and Fangio, how they talked about this week. It was rumored that Fox doesn't like Fangio. He wants him to go in the offseason. They came out and squashed that. So I think you're going to see an inspired effort by this defense. Oh, by the way, a defense that's not played that bad, considering they've had a lot of injuries. To me, Bears linebacker Gerald Freeman, he's got more tackles without a missed tackle in coverage than any other linebacker in the NFL. That's impressive. He's made 34 solo tackles, 2 assists in coverage, 12 more made tackles than the next best linebacker with no missed tackles. Plus, his best game of the season was against the Vikings, so that's a mismatch there. Plus, we'll talk about the trenches, because I love to do that. Offensive line of the Vikings is Bradford. He's been sacked 9 times in the last 2 games, 37 times this season. They can't open up a running game. They can't keep Bradford upright, especially in third and long situations. The Bears, 7 in the NFL in sacks with 37. And to me, Minnesota with no running game, they're really just going to go after Bradford all game long. Bears, they're not winning, but 5-1 against the spread in the last 6 games overall, which means they're covering. The Vikings, 0-4 against the spread in the last 4 games in the NFC North. I think that's an impressive number that stands out to me, because you have to assume that when a team plays in division, they're their biggest and most important games of the year, and those are games that the Vikings are not playing well. I think it happens again this weekend. Give me the Bears.
Well, it looks like the only game where we're interested in taking chalk here this week, and as I said, we've got 4 of the 5 for the show here, but the other ones that we're kind of on the fence at, we're looking at some underdogs in those particular roles. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we talked about this game a little bit on Wednesday in our Gridiron Gambling Report segment. They're a 6-point favorite against the Carolina Panthers. Now, Tampa Bay needs about 27 different things to go right for them to make the playoffs. Actually, it's just 7 games. But this is a team that, you know, when you look at how this season has played out for them, I think there is some motivation to finish with a 9-7 record. I think there's some motivation for a rookie head coach to finish this thing strong. And also, you know, this is a team that has, they've been together for 2-3 years, but they still have some really young players here that, you know, I feel like maybe at this stage of the game, they could be a little bit fresher than other teams, especially a Carolina team coming off of a long season with a Super Bowl appearance last year. And we can talk about those things we talked about again on Wednesday, but what you said about Cam Newton and some of the quotes that he had early in the week, it's really tough to see Carolina getting off the deck here.
Yeah, just to reiterate those, Cam basically said the entire team needs a sabbatical, which means they all need to rest. And then when talking about the hits that he'd been taking this year without flags, he said, and I quote, "It's really taking the fun out of the game for me, honestly, because at times I don't even feel safe." So to me, that makes him think twice when there's pressure on him. To me, this team that's 6-9, they have nothing to play for. You mentioned the Bucks. You're right. They're not going to make the playoffs. They have to know this. I mean, they need, out of all the scenarios, they need the one that's key the most is that they need the Redskins and the Giants to tie. So although that's happened a couple times this year, that's really not going to happen. Another thing that stood out for me is Doug Martin. To me, when I found out he was inactive late for the Bucks last week, it kind of made me step back a little bit. I was a little worried because I know Doug Martin's a popular player, and I didn't know if it was a coach's decision for one reason or another, so I thought maybe that could cause a rift. But then it came out he was pegged positive for Adderall, so he's going to be suspended for 4 games. So, again, he's not going to play this week. He won't play the first 2 games next season. So big deal for Tampa Bay, but not something that could tear apart the locker room, which is why I think it's a good thing. And last time they played the Panthers, and oh, by the way, did very well, Martin wasn't in the lineup. It was Jacquizz Rodgers. He was the lead back, 30 carries, 101 rushing yards, not only caught 6 passes too. So in last weekend, Panthers missed tackles all over the place. They gave up 152 yards to the Falcons, who have a good running game. I won't take anything away from them. But to me, I watched most of that game, at least the highlights of that game, and everything was a missed tackle. The Panthers don't care, and the Buccaneers do, so I'll take the Bucs.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I mean, there's just a lot going on with this Panthers team, too. I mean, they had former special teams coach Bruce DeHaven pass away. You know, Cam Newton had that viral video where he went and met a 10-year-old Alabama fan who was dealing with a pretty serious heart condition. I mean, there's a lot of things here when you look at Cam Newton this week, not to mention the fact that he's been injured throughout the season, both with that concussion that he suffered and this shoulder problem that he's been having. There's just a lot going on for this guy. That's a lot of emotional baggage, physical pain. It's hard to go out to the field and play this game that means absolutely nothing. And look, as far as the Carolina Panthers are concerned, with how their defense has regressed this season without Josh Norman, with Luke Kuechly in and out of the lineup, you know, Cam Newton has to be the guy. And if he's not in the right frame of mind, everybody's going to feed off of that. Every single one of these players will feed off of that. You know, a lot of times I think that teams sort of embody the personality of their coach. If they have a fiery coach, you know, they're kind of a team that lives on the edge, sort of toes that line between, you know, what's legal and what's not. If you've got a coach that's really laid back, you have teams that don't worry too much about a bad loss or, you know, are willing to sort of be a little bit more patient with the process. For me, as much of a personality as Ron Rivera is, the leader of this team is Cam Newton. And I'm very worried about the mindset of this team here going into this finale that doesn't mean anything with a team that's had a ton of success in recent years. You know, for me, it's just a perfect storm. This isn't even really necessarily a play on Tampa Bay, who, you know, does have something to play for, and it's in the 1 o'clock time slot. So they'll be able to, you know, play out how things go and then see what happens at the 4 o'clock games. This is just a straight fade of a Carolina team that I think has no business or has no desire, I should say, to show up for this one. And I think this is a game that if Carolina gets down a little bit early, the floodgates just open.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see that. Not only situational, Buccaneers are the hotter team, 6-1 against spread in the last 7 games overall, and the Panthers have been awful on the road, 2-8-1 against spread the last 11 road games. But I think there's more for Tampa to play for than the playoffs, because we said it. They're not going to make the playoffs. I mean, it's got to be Miracle Haley's Comet kind of stuff for them to get in. So what else do they have to play for? Well, first of all, Jameis Winston, he's on the verge of breaking a few records. He needs 267 passing yards to pass Andrew Luck for the most passing yards by a quarterback in his first two NFL seasons. And he needs 112 to become the first player to throw for 4,000 yards in each of his first two seasons. That's a big deal to him. He wants to be in the same kind of neighborhood, if you will, with guys like Andrew Luck. Plus, Panthers on Sundays would mean the Bucs would finish the season not only with a 9-7 record, their first winning record since 2010, because they finished dead last in the NFC South the past 5 seasons and in 7 of the past 10. But sweeping the Panthers is a big deal. Get this quote from Mike Evans. He said, "We want to go out and win. We want to win against the defending NFC champs 2 times. That would be great because they had their way with us the past couple of years, so it would be good to go out with a win. to me, a lot of guys come out this time of year and say, of course we want to win. Everybody's saying it. But to be that specific on why you want to win, because they've beaten them up, because they haven't swept them, because they're defending champs, it's a big deal to me. So to me, individual records are a big deal, because guess what? If this game is a blowout late, but Winston still hasn't passed those marks I just mentioned, they're going to throw the ball, which means they're not going to have any problem with running up the score late against this team. And that means covering the number, and that's why I'm all over the Bucs this week.
Well, I guess I lied before we started talking about that segment, because there is another chalk pick that we like here this week. So I do apologize for misleading listeners there. I guess maybe because it's probably kind of surprising to people that we're looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers as a 6-point favorite against the Cleveland Browns. Now, this is a number that was much, much higher before all the news came out that Ben Roethlisberger was going to sit out, Le'Veon Bell was going to sit out, Antonio Brown was going to sit out. This number was actually double digits. It was up in the 11 range. And yet, I think that there's some good value on Pittsburgh now with this adjusted price.
Well, I think you get a situation, and you already talked about it, where people probably would have been all over the Steelers anyway, because obviously they're a better team, especially if everybody's playing in the way they're playing right now. But then you see a line shift, and when that gets to a certain point, it's almost overkill, if you will. It opened, I see 12.5, 13, now down as low as 6 in some places. This is where people start buying back in. And look, I know Bell, Big Ben, everybody's out, but the Browns rush defense, 31st in the NFL, averaging 147.6 rushing yards allowed per game. 17 rushing scores given out. And against the pass, of course, they're just as ugly, if not even worse. Pass defense ranked 21st in the NFL, averaging 250 yards per game. Dead last in the NFL with 33 touchdowns allowed versus 9 picks, tied for NFL, 25th in the NFL, and only 22 sacks, which, again, dead last in the NFL. So this team is deep, and guess what? When you need 44 players to play, you're not going to be able to rest everybody. So I get it. You're resting their stars, but there are still guys out there that can move the ball. And against defense, this defense, it's going to happen a lot. So to me, I think this is a point where maybe the line has shifted too much. People on the Browns, because they got that win, but you and I have talked about this offline, that could be a bad thing for this team, because of course they wanted that win, only because they didn't want to go 0 forever. Now that they got the win and the monkey off the back, they probably just want the season to get over with too. Oh, by the way, they still got a number one pick on the line. I think the Steelers win big. They keep their momentum heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, the first thing I texted you after all the games last week was, I'm fading Cleveland. Because, I mean, look at how this team responded. And people are kind of poking fun at them for their response. I mean, Joe Thomas was crying in the locker room. And again, I don't know how many times I can say this, but that dude deserves every effing accolade that he's gotten throughout his career. A bust in Canton's not enough. He needs a statue that towers over the entire place. Because for the bullshit that guy has dealt with, and he's kept his mouth shut for most of it, too. I mean, if he wanted to lash out, no one would blame him at all. But he's been a consummate professional for this team. You know, to see that genuine reaction, I mean, how does this team get back up for this game now? Maybe if they were playing the Steelers at full strength, maybe if they had a chance to go out there and rock Ben Roethlisberger a couple times, you know, give Le'Veon Bell some shots, maybe play a little bit of spoiler, because this is still technically a rivalry game. Maybe that's something that they would have gotten up for. But now they're facing a team of backups. And that takes some of the edge off for Cleveland. Because, as you mentioned, they got that win. And like I said, it kind of takes away some of your competitive juices a little bit to face Landry Jones. And, you know, I don't know if D'Angelo Williams is going to play, but, you know, Sammy Coates is going to be the primary receiver or, you know, something like that. I mean, that's not what you sign up for. That's not what you want during week 17 of the season. And for Cleveland, they got that win. They needed it because going 0-16 is absolutely embarrassing, like you said. But now there are bigger things on the line. You know, if I'm Hugh Jackson, I empty the bench here in this game for Cleveland. I want to see what I've got. You know, I want to see what I have to build on for next season. Maybe Cody Kessler gets the start. Maybe RG3 does. I don't really know. I don't think it matters necessarily. But, you know, it's about next season for Cleveland. It has been all year. You got that win. Now you officially turn the page. Meanwhile, for Pittsburgh, I mean, look, it's not like Ben Roethlisberger has been invincible throughout his career. He's been hurt several times and banged up several times. So Landry Jones has to stay sharp. The backups for this Pittsburgh team have to stay sharp. These guys have gotten a lot of reps over the last few years. It's not like a lot of inexperienced players are coming in. So I actually like this spot for Pittsburgh because they have guys where they can run their regular offense. Maybe they're not the dynamic types of playmakers that usually play. But these are guys that have been in the system for a long time. They're guys that, you know, aren't necessarily playing for jobs somewhere else because, again, it's not going to be a big turnover in Pittsburgh going into next season. So I think the Steelers can just go out there, do the things that they do with a guy in Landry Jones who's been around for a while. I think they can have a lot of success here in this game against a Cleveland team that it's a rivalry game, but, you know, people are paying attention to Ohio State this weekend.
Yeah, and look, the Browns are a disaster. 1-10 against the spread, both against a team with a winning record and in their last 11 games against the AFC North. They haven't beaten Pittsburgh since 2003. To me, this is a scenario where you mentioned it. The emotion was so high after that win last week. If you saw the highlights, I mean, the crowd was beside themselves, jumping up and down like they won the Super Bowl, and they should, by the way. And Hugh Jackson is emotional, the game ball. I talk about it a lot in the NBA. It's hard to recover from a game like that. It's hard to go out and give it your all and then celebrate it or even exhale afterwards and expect anything but a letdown the next time out. And whoever starts for Cleveland, they're going to be in trouble. Last week in the win, RG3 was sacked 7 times. And, of course, he can only complete 1 of 5 passes under pressure down the field of 20 yards or more. So what's that mean? You get after the quarterback, you shorten the field. That's where you get the turnovers. Steelers couldn't be playing better football right now than they are. I mean, they've now outgained each of their last 9 opponents and outrushed each of their last 6 opponents. Oh, by the way, 5-1 against the spread over the last 6. Now, you talked about Landry. Why does he want to go out there and play? Cash money. I mean, he's going to be a free agent. And when you're a backup quarterback, either $4 or $5 million if you're good, or $2 or $3 million if you're bad. So there's a lot for him on the line. There was a quote, Raymond Foster said, there's a lot for him on the line. I think he knows it. We know it. So it's to be on his mind, which means now the offensive line has a little bit of initiative to play well with him, to play well for him. So do the skill players. If the NFL players understand everything and anything, it's getting paid. So, of course, he wants to get out there and do well. Plus, everybody wants to win. I don't care what game it is. But now you have extra incentive for Pittsburgh and Landry Jones. I think it's going to be a good game by him, and I think it's going to be a big win by Pittsburgh.
Well, we'll go back to the big dog side of things here. We'll go out to the AFC West and look at the San Diego Chargers, who are a 6-point home underdog in the Super Contest. This number has gone down to 5.5 in the betting market against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think in terms of building a case for any of the 4 Super Contest plays that we've talked about here so far, this is probably the strongest case with the most compelling information.
Yeah, I agree. And to me, first, let's look at the Chiefs. They're playing great football. I'm not going to argue that. But this is almost a letdown sort of situation for them. And I understand they've got to win because if the Raiders lose, which could happen, they're looking at the AFC West title. So they do have a reason to come out here and play. But I think what we're seeing here in the line is a bit of overreaction, most notably to that Chargers loss. Because when you look at it and what's going on, granted it's only 4.5, 5.5, but we're talking over 80% of the people on the Chiefs. To me, that's a very, very big deal from a consent standpoint because everybody's betting on the Chiefs. And I think it's because of that loss by the Chargers to the Browns. And the Browns, or the Chargers rather, would never admit it, but that loss was embarrassing. You don't want to be the team that loses to the Browns. So I think they have a reason to play as well. I think you see a big, inspired effort by Phillip Rivers, who always plays well, or usually, I should say, plays well in these late-season games, especially at home. And I think taking the points here is the only way to go.
Well, and think back, too. You go all the way back to Week 1, which feels like it was an eternity ago. The Chargers had Kansas City on the ropes. In fact, they effectively had that game won, and they blew it. And they wind up starting the season 1-4 as opposed to, you know, well, 1-1, I guess I should say. They did beat the Jaguars the next week. They very easily could have been 2-0 going into that game on the road against the Colts. Maybe things go a little bit differently for them. Now, they have dropped 4 straight, so I understand why people are looking to sell stock in the Chargers. And again, when you lose to an 0-14 team, people are obviously going to have a reaction. But the nice thing is when you do suffer an embarrassing loss like that, even with nothing to play for this week, I have to think that they're going to show up. Phillip Rivers said the same thing. He said, you know, the Chiefs are going to get everything we've got. It's the only way we do it here. It's the only way we've done it in years past when we've been eliminated. They did it last year when they played Denver. They gave Denver everything that the Broncos could handle. Also, you have an emotional factor here. This might be the last game in San Diego for this team. We thought that last year when they gave it their all against Denver. Maybe this year it's even closer to a reality. So Phillip Rivers wants to finish on a high note for these fans. We saw the players get very emotional last year when they thought it was the last game in San Diego. I think that that's the same thing that happens here this week. Rivers also said that he was rooting for the Chiefs last week because he wanted them to have something to play for. He wanted them to be playing for the AFC title, and they're also playing for the 2 seed in that bye. So from what I gather here, you know, Phillip Rivers is the leader of this team. And so from what I gather, he wants his teammates to feed off of him. I think we get a really spirited effort from San Diego, and you've got some more notes with regards to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, to me, there's more than enough reason for the Chargers to play. So for those who mentioned the Chargers probably don't have reasons to play, you mentioned it, not only the fact that they couldn't move, but the fact that he wanted Kansas City to win. Look, first off, I'll throw in a trend. They're 10-4 against spread in the last 14 games, falling a straight-up loss, so they always rebound well. But at the revenge spot, the Chiefs are going for their third straight sweep of the annual two-game season series against the Chargers. So I thought about it with Carolina and Tampa. You remember those kind of losses against rivals, which I think is one of the reasons he wants to win. Plus, individual goals all over the place. Melvin Gordon was hurt. He's looking good in practice. It looks like he's going to play. Of course he's going to play. You know why? Because he's 3 yards shy of 1,000 yards after missing the last 2 weeks. He's been talking about playing. He'll be there. Plus, Phil Rivers, 4 touchdown passes to just tie his career high of a 35 in the season. Plus, 300-yard passing game will be his 52nd if he can do it, which is a franchise record. Antonio Gates' next touchdown catch will tie him with Tony Gonzalez, who played for the Chiefs, for most ever by an NFL tight end. To me, I see him getting 2, breaking this record. So now Antonio Gates has reason to play Phillip Rivers. Melvin Gordon to get 1,000, plus a big game against the rivals. I love the points. Wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers went outright.
No, it wouldn't surprise me either. I mean, this is one of those games where it certainly looks on the surface like the underdog has nothing to play for, but this is one of those games where I do feel like pride comes into play. And also, if you're the San Diego Chargers, I mean, I get it. You know, this was a team that was 5-6 with a chance to have its season swing, you know, one of two ways, and obviously it swung the way that they didn't want it to. But this isn't a team that had high expectations coming into the season. You know, Denver was the reigning Super Bowl champions. Kansas City is a playoff threat every year. Everyone was piling on the Oakland train after they looked a lot better last season than they were supposed to. So expectations were already low for this San Diego team. Maybe not within the locker room because nobody thinks, hey, if we go 6-10, that's good. But this isn't a team that's necessarily disappointed, I don't think, with where it currently is. I think that they kind of resigned themselves to this fact when they started 1-4 that, you know what, it's a really uphill climb for us now. This isn't a situation like Carolina, for example, who we're looking to fade, where, you know, Carolina's been to the top of the mountain. They've looked down on everybody else. This year, they're not doing that. This year, they're looking up at everybody else. So I think that you've got very different scenarios here. You've got a Kansas City team that, you know, certainly wants to win the division. And if they don't do it, I don't think that they're going to be that upset about it. But, you know, obviously there's that bye factor there. So there's a little bit of pressure on Kansas City. And we've seen teams here in recent weeks with lots of things to play for totally fall flat. And whether that's because they didn't execute or because the opponent stepped up, you know, that's up to you to decide. But I feel like the opponent steps up here.
Oh, I agree. To me, strongest play on the board, at least out of picks that we have. Chargers are home. Look, this is a 5-win team. I know everybody's going to point for them, no reason to play. And the Chiefs, another thing I like, again, to me, it's overreaction. We talk about this in week one. I think it hangs around forever. The Chiefs are putting together complete games. The question marks that they used to have on offense, all of a sudden people are gone. People are not talking about it anymore. So the natural instinct is to keep riding that train, especially when you have a Chargers game or a Chargers team who are not only losing games 4 in a row, as you mentioned, but they're losing to the worst teams in football, like the Cleveland Browns. So to me, that stands out. And for that reason, they're going to go over and beyond to take a team like this. Oh, by the way, a road chalk. Oh, by the way, we get a divisional home dog. To me, all signs point to San Diego.
So right now, 4 of our 5 plays, looking at the Bears, the Buccaneers, the Steelers, and the Chargers. One more to pick out here from our rapid-fire rundown. And, of course, I do want to throw out this disclaimer. Things can change. I mean, based on the information that comes out here on Friday, you know, we may end up backing off of one of those games or something like that. We will never play the other side of a game. But, you know, there could be situations where things do change a little bit. We do have to alter our card as a result. we'll go through the rapid fire rundown here. All these games on Sunday, so that makes it maybe a little bit easier for people. But we'll start going by rotation number with the Houston Texans, who are a 3.5-point road dog against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I'm on the Titans. I think they have a reason to play here. Think about this. They're not going to go to the playoffs, but if they win, they could tie the record, the best record in division. Plus, they're used to losing overall. It's a good season. I know Mariota's not in the lineup, but really, Texans have nothing to play for. I think they're going to rest Lamar Miller. To me, they're just the team that's 1-5 against the spread in the last six games overall, so no reason to take the favorite. Give me the Titans.
I like the Texans here in this one. I'm actually going to go opposite you here on this one, and I do think I will respectfully disagree that Houston has nothing to play for, because they got to figure this thing out with Tom Savage. They have to try and find out what they have heading into the postseason in this guy. So I don't think that they can really change too much. Now, Lamar Miller won't play. Maybe DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller have their reps limited a little bit. But also, you have to walk that fine line of trying not to get somebody hurt. But also, Tom Savage needs to develop some timing with these wide receivers. So I don't think Houston can change a whole lot. Maybe Romeo Crennel takes it a little bit easier with some guys on defense, because we know this Houston defense is good. But I just think 3.5 is too high in this game. I'll take the Texans. I think they keep it close. Wouldn't shock me if they win. But this is a game where you want to get confidence for Tom Savage. And if you don't do that, well, that could be a real big problem heading into the divisional round. The New York Jets, 3.5-point home underdogs against the train wreck soap opera that is the Buffalo Bills.
This is how fast things change in the NFL, and this is probably one of the reasons that we talk about disclaimers and how we could change. This morning I sent you a text saying that or an email saying that I like the Jets in this game, and I think it's too many points and they could win outright, and now I'm off them. I'm not necessarily on the Bills. To me, it's more of a pass. For this segment, I'll take the Bills because the Jets have injuries everywhere. Forte and Powell look like they may not play in this game, which means you're going to get two undrafted rookies running the ball. Plus, we know all about the issues going on with the Jets. Now, they probably want to play hard, maybe just to win, because they have some incentive to beat a Bills team that knocked them out of the playoffs. But really, there's nothing there anymore. To me, there's nothing there anymore. And for the Bills, they got a new coach. Maybe they want to play for him. This is why we talk about how difficult it is this time of year to pick a team in certain situations. And it's almost impossible for me to take either side, but I'll take the Bills 7-3 against spread in the last 10 meetings. Nothing strong.
I would really like the Bills if Tyrod Taylor was getting the start here, but this whole EJ Manuel thing, I mean, there's going to be a rift in the locker room with this. Tyrod Taylor's obviously not happy about it. We'll see where he ends up playing football next year. I think this team plays for Anthony Lynn. I mean, the offense really took off when Lynn was named the offensive coordinator when they fired Greg Roman. There are some questions about this team's motivation in terms of Rex Ryan being fired and some of the players took to social media and all that. But I think they genuinely like Anthony Lynn. And if they do, he's a guy on the short list for this job. So if they like him that much, I think they do show up and play for him. The Jets are a disaster right now, not just the injuries, but you talked about it. You're concerned about Todd Bowles and his reach there in that locker room. I talked about it on Wednesday. I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick has any respect left from his teammates. And if he's getting a starting nod, which he is, then I just don't see them showing up to play. So I would have to go Bills here in this spot, but I really wish it was Tyrod Taylor instead of EJ Manuel. But then again, that probably would have added a point and a half to the line. Might be 4, 4.5, maybe even 5. So I don't know. We'll have to see how that one plays out. The Cincinnati Bengals are a 2-point home favorite against the Baltimore Ravens. And actually, as we've been recording here, Baltimore's taken some money out there in the betting market down to a pick 'em or down to 1 out there.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot going on with this game, too. The Ravens are a team that don't play well in Cincinnati anyway, 3-8 and get spread in the last 11 meetings. Not to mention they're 1-5 against the spread in the last 6 road games. To me, the talk, and you brought up the rumors on Wednesday that Marvin Lewis could be gone and come out, and they've been squashed. But I'll be honest with you, I don't believe them. They're not going to come out and say he's going to be gone at this point. Usually they don't, being all about him. Steve Smith came out, said he was probably going to retire, put an 89% mark on that. So a lot of people could assume that the Ravens are playing for that. The Ravens also came out and confirmed that there was not going to be any coaching changes to me, not that there would be a question of that. But there's no reason for the Ravens to play this game, none at all that I can think of. Maybe a Steve Smith swan song. The Bengals, they're at least at home. They've shown that they play hard at home against divisional teams. I just think there's more reason to back the Bengals. Don't like the game at all. But if I'm going to be on any team in this game, it's the Bengals.
I would reluctantly lean Ravens here in this spot. I think they do play for Harbaugh. I think they do show up here in this one. The problem for me is Cincinnati is just destroyed by injuries right now. Tyler Eifert, he's not going to play. You know, Vontaze Burfict's been in and out of the lineup lately. A.J. Green is dinged up. They have all kinds of problems. They are shuffling around offensive linemen. Seems like they don't really know necessarily what they're going to do in the trenches here in this game offense. I'd have to go Baltimore because of that. I mean, maybe Baltimore is concerned about finishing 9-7 instead of 8-8. I don't know. Maybe that's a motivating factor for them. But I just think right now with the personnel on both teams, you know, with the injury situations, I have to go Baltimore, but not a particularly strong play. Washington Redskins laying more than a touchdown at home in an absolute must-win situation against the New York Giants.
Absolute must-win. No doubt about it. They've got to win. Now, it's intriguing to think that the Giants will want to knock the Redskins out because they're divisional teams, they're rival teams. But I just don't see it happening. Now, I know the Giants have said they're going to play their starters. I just don't think it'll last long. Sure, they'll play their starters. But, I mean, this is a Redskins team that probably couldn't be playing better on offense if they want to right now. Over the last 8 weeks, Washington has two of the top five wide receivers in yards per route run, which I think is huge. And when these teams played each other in week three, DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, 10 catches, 154 yards, and a touchdown. Kirk Cousins is going to be on point. They're running the ball well. It looks like Jordan Reed's going to play this week. I think the Giants do put their starters in at first, but when this game gets out of hand, I think you'll see them benched in the second half because they don't want anybody to get hurt. Redskins win going away. I'll drop the points.
I dropped the points here, too, in this one with Washington. And the big thing for me is I think that they learned something 2 weeks ago in that loss to Carolina at home. Everything was set up perfectly for them. Monday Night Football, they had everything they could possibly want. And sometimes you need that little bit of humility, I guess. And this is still a semi-young team and a semi-young head coach in Jay Gruden. So I think that was a good learning opportunity for them. Now, last week, that game got out of hand because Matt Barkley was throwing turnovers like he was Ryan Fitzpatrick. So maybe that's a little bit misleading for Washington. But I do think that, you know, they've learned their lesson. I think this is a game that they just go out there and roll. And look, realistically, they should. So they have no excuse not to go out here and blow the doors off the Giants. I think they do take care of business, but I don't know if I can trust them enough to make it our fifth Super Contest play. The Detroit Lions, again, this is a game where everything is on the line. Sunday Night Football flexed into Sunday night. That's why it comes up here in rotation order. But they are a 3.5-point home underdog for the NFC North crown against the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and I know everything points towards the Packers. They're playing well, short week for the Lions. But look, home team 6-2 against spread in the last 8 meetings. The Lions 5-1 against spread in the last 6 home games. They're playing well at home. Detroit, especially Matt Stafford, who we know runs this team, was able to play well against Green Bay last time out. Plus, the information I wanted to see, which was that Darius Slay is going to be back in the secondary. He's practicing this week. To me, he's the X factor on defense, so I think that allows his defense to play better. That line's low for a reason, and I think it's going to get a lot of people jumping on Green Bay. And I even told you when I sent you an email, it's almost more of a gut play because I know if I brought up stats and numbers, we'd have a lot leaning towards Green Bay, but I'll take Detroit.
I'm taking Green Bay here. I'll be square. I'll be Joe Public. I'll lay the price. Green Bay is just rolling right now. They're playing so well. Talked about it on a Wednesday segment. They figured out how to use Ty Montgomery. Jordy Nelson's got that extra spring back in his step. Aaron Rodgers has been fantastic. This defense has gotten healthier. Everything does point in Green Bay's direction. Certainly it worries me sometimes when you get a game like that in the NFL where it looks, you know, almost like a slam dunk type of play. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Detroit wins this game. But for me, comparing the two teams side by side, the recent body of work, I have no choice but to go with Green Bay. This is a tough game here. The Indianapolis Colts, 4.5-point home favorites against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, ugly game. There's a few on the board that I wouldn't even touch. I see the opening at 7, drops down to 4.5. One of the things that really stands out to me in this game is when I look at press clippings and quotes, which of course I do a lot, the Colts are already talking about their year in review more than they're talking about this game, how they could have been better, Pagano apologizing, Luck saying how they should have played harder, they should have done this, they should have done that. To me, that means there's not a lot of focus on this week, and there probably shouldn't be. They're not playing for much. They're playing the Jaguars. On the flip side, Jaguars are a young team who have been playing hard every week, and they've been out what seems like since week six. Blake Bortles actually looked good last week, and maybe that was a mirage. Maybe he's figured a few things out. I think he has. I think the points are the play here, and the only way I'll go, so I'll take the Jags.
I would have to take Jacksonville here in this spot as well. I mean, this is a pretty good defense. And if there's one thing that Gus Bradley did with this team, it's that he fashioned a pretty good defense. Now, offensively, they are a disaster. And that's something that the new head coach will have to try and figure out. But seemed like they gave a pretty good effort for Doug Marrone last week. Obviously, things, you know, sort of spun out of control a little bit for Tennessee based on the situation that they had. But I mean, this is a Jacksonville team that, you know, there are a lot of guys fighting for jobs with the new regime next year, Blake Bortles being one of them. So if they're going to step up, this is a decent spot for them to do it. They have a chance to win two road games in a season for probably the first time in, what, 15 years or something like that. They've been a horrible, horrible road team for a long time. So they got a chance to do it here for Indianapolis. Again, I think this is one of those teams in Indianapolis where you've gone to the playoffs, you've been in the AFC Championship game, you've done this, you've done that. Does finishing 8-8 really do it for you? I don't think so. I don't think that they show up and give much of an effort here in this one. Although then again, when we've had these watershed moments for Chuck Pagano throughout the season, his team has stepped up. So I have to respect that, which is why I'm not all in on the Jags for the Super Contest, but I do think they take care of business here. Philadelphia Eagles are a 4-point home favorite against the Dallas Cowboys, who legitimately have nothing to play for.
Yeah, legitimately have nothing to play for. And I talked about it earlier in the week when I saw this line. Why would the Eagles open up as a favorite if Vegas didn't know or slash assume somebody was going to be resting? Sure enough, the Cowboys have talked about how now there's a plan in place for Sanchez, Mark Sanchez, of all people, to come on and get a little game time. Cowboys 1-4 against spread in the last five games overall. So from a betting standpoint, you can kind of say they've been limping down the stretch. But to me, the real difference for this Eagles team, Lane Johnson, 4-1 when he plays. The Eagles drove 78 yards to open their win against the Giants. Two rushes accounted for 42 yards that featured Johnson as a key blocker. To me, in the offensive line, he's a must. The Eagles totaled 118 rushing yards against the Giants, with 76 of them coming off the right B and C gaps on the offensive line, which, oh, by the way, is all Lane Johnson. So to me, he makes the difference on the offensive line in the running game and in the passing game. Eagles are the kind of team that would like this for momentum. Young coach, if you can beat the best team in football, resting or not, they're going to do it. I'll take the Eagles. I hate Mark Sanchez.
You know, I mean, if Ezekiel Elliott had a shot at the rookie rushing record, maybe Dallas cares a little bit more about this game. He's 178 yards away. There's no way he's going to touch the ball enough times for that, if he touches the ball at all. That being said, Mark Sanchez is taking on a former team here, so I have to think that there's a little bit of motivation there for him. Darren McFadden and Alfred Morris are going to get the ball a lot. Those are two guys that, you know, may be looking for jobs elsewhere. Certainly Morris has a chance to be a feature back somewhere. Run DMC, I don't really know about that. He probably doesn't stay healthy enough for that. But there are some guys on this Dallas roster that have some things to play for here this week. On the flip side for Philadelphia, I think this is a Philadelphia team that just wants this thing done and over with, because – you know, I talked about it earlier in the year, offensive coordinator Frank Reich looking at Carson Wentz and saying, this kid's hanging his head, he's tired, he's not handling losing very well. Sure, they won last week against the Giants, and kudos to them for that. But I just think this Philadelphia team wants this thing to be over with. I think Carson Wentz wants this thing to be over with. He's been beaten up. He's thrown the ball more than anybody else in the NFL. That's a lot on him. I think that Philadelphia sort of packs this one in a little bit. I think this is an ugly, ugly, ugly football game. And ugly generally means take the points, so I'll take Dallas catching the 4 here in this spot. How about we move on down here to the Atlanta Falcons taking on the New Orleans Saints, and let the cat out of the bag here that this is a game that could make it onto the Super Contest card.
Yeah, you know, we talked about it earlier in the week, and I like the Saints. In fact, I think the Saints have been playing great football as well of late. They're 8-1 against spread in the last 9 road games, so they're playing well away from home. Also, the underdog, a perfect 6-0 in the last 6 games in this rivalry. And again, it's a rivalry, so that's enough reason for the Saints to get up. Not only that, but they're playing good football. I told you earlier in the week, I think the Falcons are a team that are a good value bet to win the Super Bowl. I just don't like them in this spot, and I know they have something to play for here with the second seed, as they'll be watching the 49ers and the Seahawks game. But again, I just think too many points. I really like the Saints here. Give me the Saints.
Yeah, I think this is too many points, too. I think this game is a complete and utter shootout, total track meet game. You know, as I was talking about on Wednesday's show, I did like the over in the 56 range. It hasn't really moved a whole lot as of yet. But I, like I said, I think it's a 7-on-7, you know, just air it out and see what happens type of football. And you got to like Drew Brees in a situation like that. So I think that this number is a little bit too high. And I certainly think New Orleans, who, if they win, can go 500. Maybe that's a motivating factor for them. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I do think that this is too many points in a game where we're going to see a lot of them. New England Patriots are 9.5-point road favorites against the Miami Dolphins. And this is a really big number in a game where it seems like neither team should have much interest.
Right. I mean, I think what a lot of people connect with, and I do too a little bit, is that the Patriots really just put it in neutral to end the season last year, and it kind of came back to haunt them. The Dolphins, on the other hand, the thing that really concerns me is they're talking about Tannehill. I mean, I'm seeing it all over Twitter that, you know, even an hour ago they showed that he was mobile in practice. He's got a brace on his left knee, so they're talking about him coming back, which would, I think would be a mistake, at least in this game. Maybe give him a few reps if you really want to, but I would stay away from it altogether. Dolphins, they're red hot. 8-2 against spread in the last 10 games overall. They're playing a rival. The Patriots always play bad in Miami. 0-4 against spread the last 4 meetings in Miami. Patriots definitely have something to play for. I definitely think they want to win this game. But again, I think it's another area where their number is just too high. And I'm really nervous as a Patriots fan. I do want that one seed, an AFC home field advantage throughout. However, Cameron Wake is a beast, and Sue, of course, and this is a game where they can get after the quarterback. That's the Achilles heel, if you will, of this Patriots team, and I definitely don't want to see Brady hurt before the playoffs. Too many points. Give me the Dolphins.
The big question for me in this game is, what does Adam Gase do? Who plays and for how long? And that's something I want to see with young coaches because, you know, what do you do? Do you play guys? And if somebody gets injured, the media goes, what the hell were you thinking? Do you not play guys? You look rusty in the wild card round, and people go, well, you shouldn't have sat everybody. You know, so that's what I want to see. I mean, there's a learning curve attached to this here, and it's a situation that Adam Gase is in as a rookie head coach. And it's uncharted territory for him. So that's what I want to see. I want to see what Miami intends to do here from a snap count standpoint, from a workload standpoint. And for me, I think if you're a rookie head coach, you err on the side of caution and you look, I didn't want to get anybody hurt. I wanted to give our guys the best opportunity possible to go out here and beat a team in the playoffs. So I would have to look New England here, but again, I mean, this is way too many points for a road game. And you know, it's just, I think there are much better opportunities out on the board. Arizona Cardinals, 6-point road favorites against the Los Angeles Rams.
Ugly. Hate this game. Don't want to bet it. Barely want to talk about it, but I guess we got to. Two teams were severely disappointed. Everybody knew the Rams weren't going to be all that great. But to me, even from what I've seen in Goff and his development, hasn't been that impressive. I'm no quarterback guru, of course, and it, granted, he needs more time. But it looks bad all around. And kind of like the Vikings, Rams were a team that you would go, well, their defense will take care of things. Their defense will make sure they stay closing games, and that hasn't been the case. On the flip side, you got an Arizona Cardinals team, who I thought at the beginning of the year with the addition of David Johnson, I know they've had him for a few, but how well he's been running, they could win the Super Bowl. Now they're not going to make the playoffs. You could argue their Super Bowl is against Seattle. This is an ugly, ugly game for me. Give me the points.
How about this? So this came out a few hours ago about Bruce Arians, that he wants players to let him know if they're getting close to contract incentives so that he can help them get paid. And this topic came up, David Johnson, close to 1,000 receiving yards, over 1,200 rushing yards already. Could be the third running back in NFL history with a 1,000 rushing yard season and a 1,000 yard receiving season. So I think that wins you some points there in the locker room. You know, the coach is looking out for you. I feel like they're going to respond to something like that and go out here and play against a Rams team that's going to have a new head coach next year. You know, Jared Goff has taken some lumps. Arizona's better from a point differential standpoint than their 6-8-1 record would suggest. So maybe finish this thing out strong. The only way I can look is to take them. Seattle Seahawks laying 9.5 against the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, another ugly game. To me, the thing I want to do is take the Seahawks and drop those points. And they definitely want to win. They still want to, you know, grab that 2-seed. To me, I think you're going to see Thomas Rawls get a healthy dose of running the football because they want to try to establish that running game before they get in the playoffs because that Seattle offensive line is awful. They don't want Russell Wilson to get hurt. So I expect them to try to run, which could change up their offensive game plan, which to me could make this a lot closer than it could be. Of course, I can't trust the 49ers. To me, I think this is too many points on a road, and I won't call it a meaningless game, but they'll be scoreboard watching, so it could get meaningless late, which could open a back door to what's going on. So to me, I hate it. If I got to do anything, I can't trust the 49ers and Chip Kelly, so give me the Seahawks.
Seahawks are the only way I can go, but I see no incentive, no killer instinct from them to go and win this game by double digits like they need to. They're focused solely on the playoffs. That's the only care that they have in the world right now. They don't care about making a statement against the 49ers. But that being said, the 49ers are so terrible that they may get themselves shut out. So Seattle really the only way I can look there. One more game to touch on here. Denver, 1-point favorites against the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, what a game. What a game. Just ugly all around, in my opinion. But Raiders 7-2-1 against spread in the last 10 meetings in Denver. A lot of those games is when they weren't very good at all. The road team 18-7-1 against spread in the last 26 meetings. So I'll throw out the home field advantage if there's such a thing at this point. And you can tell Denver's looking towards the future. Paxton Lynch is going to start from what I'm seeing. I've even read things where maybe him and Simeon will both play. To me, a lot of preseason stuff, which is something you don't want to see. On the flip side, in the NBA, I call it the superstar subtraction. You lose one of your best players, the rest team rallies around, gets up for a big game to show that they can still do this. And I think that's what Jack Del Rio has to show this team. They have to get a win here so they can show not only the Raiders themselves how well they can play and how well they can play in the playoffs, but the rest of the world, really. So I think this is really a statement game for the Raiders. I think the Broncos are building towards the future. Give me the Raiders.
I would take the Raiders here in this spot as well. And this is kind of that whole Tom Savage theory when it comes to the Texans, is that Oakland, maybe they sit some guys on defense. Maybe they limit the reps for Crabtree and Cooper. And maybe, you know, Jalen Richard plays a little bit more than Latavius Murray, some stuff like that. But they have to get Matt McGloin comfortable in this offense. That is job number one here this week. They have to do it against a pretty good Broncos defense. But when the Broncos got down last week against the Chiefs, they really kind of packed it in that game. And I just don't know if they can flip the switch here and turn it around and play well in this game. I mean, again, you just won the Super Bowl. Does going 9-7 mean anything to you? I would say no. So I think Oakland has to go out here, treat this game like it's just any other Sunday, like it's any other regular game, to get Matt McGloin ready for the playoffs. If they get that bye week to the point where they can give McGloin another week of prep time to get ready, I think there's value in that for them. I have to take Oakland in this spot. This number has come down from 3.5. Totally agree with the move. Makes sense. And Oakland would be the way I would look here. And who knows? Maybe that's the one that makes it onto our Super Contest card. But any final thoughts, my friend?
Oh, man, it's been a fantastic year. You are an absolute class act. I've enjoyed every single week, and it only seems to get better and better every week. I look forward to it, and it was absolutely fantastic. So I wish not only you, but everybody that's listening, a very, very happy new year.
Well, same to you, man. Thank you so much for all your hard work throughout the season. I know the results didn't necessarily reflect all the work and the hours that we put in, but you know, it's been an honor to be your teammate throughout this thing, and I wish you and your family nothing but the best in 2017 as well. There you go. There's our Week 17 Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. A little bit bittersweet to be putting that one to bed because, you know, we haven't had the season that we wanted to, but it is a really fun segment. It's great to get together with Cole and talk football. But for me, you know, now that football season's winding down, it means baseball's just a little bit closer, and our listeners know I'm a diehard baseball fan. So at least there's that for me to look forward to. We got one more segment left to go here in 2016. That is the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Keep in mind, our Bang the Book Radio listeners can use that promo code BTB Radio. That'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up. An additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. So much going on here. Want to get yourself set up for success with college basketball. So if you don't have an account over there at DSI, that's something that you should probably jump on here while that promo code is available. So one more segment left to go, and that is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent for this week's version of the Odds Report. Brent, of course, from DSI Sportsbook. Brent, how's it going today, man?
Everything going good. It's a beautiful, sunshiny, hot Christmas down here.
Oh, lucky you. We have plenty of stuff to get to here, college football and the NFL. Of course, college football, the last round of bowl games kicking off here through Monday, and then the national championship game coming up following Monday. NFL. Lots of stuff going on here for Week 17. So we've got about 11 or 12 games here that we're going to get to on today's segment. Beginning on the college football side, this is a number that started to move a little bit last night, and last night meaning Wednesday night, since we're recording this here on Thursday evening, and then a little bit throughout the day on Thursday. But that's TCU and Georgia. We got some movement finally in the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, some big movement. Actually, we need to talk about TCU going from 1 all the way up to 3. And this is a game where it's a nice spot for us because, you know, we always feel a little more comfortable when we're looking at our splits and we've got the public betting, you know, a whole lot one way, sharp guys betting the other way. And this is one of those games where I've got sharp money on TCU that was -1, so that's what drove the number up. And I've got actually about 3 times as many more bets on Georgia, so that's really, you know, it's quite indicative of a lot of public money on Georgia. And the one, you know, really, really big bet you want to call it on TCU, like the full limit bet. So it's a good spot for us right now. And that, you know, I do have a little bit more money on Georgia as well, but just it's all public money. So it's a nice spot for us when you have a situation like that. You know, the total, I think we might have talked about that one already in terms of the under being a sharp play. If not, it was the under 49 is where that sharp action came in. So it's, you know, again, we always like it when sharp guys are on the under as well, because the public is almost always on the over. So definitely a good spot in terms of looking at this game for us is you know, we're going to need the under and we're going to need TCU. And right now that's great because I got sharps on TCU, like I said, -1 and the under 49.5 as well.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the SEC, everyone thinks of it as the best conference in the country. And from a talent standpoint, it still probably is. But the SEC off to a slow start here in bowl season. By the time our listeners hear this, the South Carolina game will have wrapped up, also the Arkansas game. But, you know, Mississippi State didn't look very good. Vanderbilt didn't look very good. So we've got a little bit of an SEC fade there in the Liberty Bowl. But that's not the case in the Music City Bowl. But we do have some injuries kind of driving this movement as well.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it for sure. You know, we did take sharp action on this game. Right now, we're sitting Nebraska and Tennessee. Tennessee's all the way up to -6. You know, sometimes you'll see movement that just, you know, happens on injuries and information and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, not necessarily, you know, sharp guys moving it, but it's people who are kind of, you know, looking to play a number both ways and stuff like that. Guys who are, like, looking for a middle or to side us or something like that. But this was, you know, a definite sharp play on Tennessee, -3. So we're all the way up to 6.5 right now. And my, you know, my money's very one-sided, favoring Tennessee as well. My wager count, you know, it's not crazy. I'm not way, way one-sided on Tennessee. Definitely, you know, I have more wagers on Tennessee, that's for sure. But the line movement based on this one, you know, from the -3 was, you know, a definite sharp bet. It's not a guy who is just betting the injury information, but he might have been part of that, but it's definitely about the number as well. Like he loved the, you know, the team at that side. Just a quick look at our total as well. No surprise here in terms of my wager count being almost like 3-1 favoring the over, and we're sitting at 57 right now. I don't have any sharp action on the total of this one, but Tennessee -3 was definitely sharp there, Adam.
Well, the Capital One Orange Bowl, this is a game that you and I talked about when we first started looking at bowl season as a game that's going to draw a really, really significant handle between Michigan and Florida State. Two well-known teams, two public teams. Kind of surprised we haven't seen too much side action as of yet on this game, which means maybe you guys hung a good number on it. But we do have some total action here for this one.
Yeah, was that a hint of surprise when you said we actually hung up a good number, Adam?
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, no, this one, actually on the side, it's good for us. I mean, we're sitting here, you know, in a game where I've got good two-way action on both sides of this one. We took, you know, what I'm going to call pseudo-sharp action that came in on Michigan -6. I took, you know, a definite list guy, you know, a sharp guy on the +7 on this one. So, you know, the number seems to work for us. You know, the 6 and, you know, 6.5 and 7's been all right for us. If the game landed 7, yeah, it wouldn't be great for us if Michigan won by 7, but, you know, not a terrible spot at all. So it seems like that, you know, that number definitely seems to be the right, you know, the right spot between 6.5 and 7 there. The total, though, we have seen, you know, quite a bit of movement on this one. I did take sharp action on this. The actual first initial hit from what I'll call a pseudo sharp was on the under 57. Then a definite very sharp player came under the 55.5, and kind of just followers have been tailing since then. But you know, betting limit bets as well. So we're, you know, moving the number. We did get a hit out, you know, off the 55.5 back down to 55, a full number bet down to 54, a full down to 53, and right now we're down to 52. So this is one of those rare games where I've got pretty much nothing but under money. I do have a wager count that's, you know, it's not terrible. It is slightly favoring the under, which is kind of a surprise because you do expect public money to betting the over. But this one's, you know, like I said, a little bit, you know, favoring the under in terms of the actual number of wagers I've taken, but my money is very one-sided, like almost 10-1 because of all those sharp bets coming in on the under. So under 57 is where the first pseudo sharp kind of bet came, and under 55.5 is where the, you know, what I'll call a list guy came in on that one. So the side, we're a good spot, you know, 7 seems to be working for us, but the total, we're definitely, you know, fishing for some over money right now.
So again, I'll ask you the same question that I sort of posed as we started looking at the overall bowl season. Outside of the college football playoff semifinals, Washington, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and then, of course, the national championship game, which should have the biggest handle of all. Is this Florida State-Michigan game number 3 in terms of betting handle, or is it actually at the top right now?
Yeah, no, it's the Washington-Bama game is clearly the most heavily wagered game right now. After that, you know, Ohio State Clemson, as you touched on, this one is right behind it, Florida State Michigan, and actually right behind that I've got Auburn and Oklahoma, so that's a good game in terms of volume for us as well. USC Penn State's not, it's certainly not bad action at all either, money versus say like a Iowa Florida game, it's just like, you know, almost like look at it right now, it's about 5 times the amount of dollar volume I've taken on that Alabama Washington game.
Well, speaking of that game, that's the one that we're going to right here now, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, the first of 2 college football playoff semifinals set for December 31st. And are you surprised to see this avalanche of sharp money on Washington?
Not really. No, we kind of expected that the public was going to back Alabama, and we had to go, you know, at a number that was high enough that, you know, it was, you know, we weren't going to be giving anything away, but kind of suspecting as well that money was going to be coming back on Washington. Now, I am kind of surprised that we've gone past the, you know, we've broken the past 14. I mean, this number was up around 17 and stuff like that. So, I'm definitely surprised that it's gone, you know, below 14. I thought it would kind of hang there. I thought we might use, you know, kind of silly, but, you know, minus 14, dog 15 or something like that. But I've taken, you know, sharp bets on Washington, you know, the sharpest bet, you know, I got a pseudo sharp bet, we'll call it a 15.5, but a very sharp bet on Washington plus the 14.5, another hit at the plus 14. So we basically had no choice but to go down to 13.5, and that's where we are right now. My actual number of wagers I've taken on this game is 2-1 favoring Alabama. So no surprise there in terms of the public backing Alabama. But in terms of like the big bets, I've got, you know, a couple decent-sized bets, we're going to call it, on Alabama. But definitely the big heavy hitters have all played Washington, so that's quite telling there, I think. Talking about a wager count favoring Alabama, almost 2-1, my dollar volume is definitely in favor of Washington. Now, you know, kind of tipping the sharp public split here as well is that I've got, you know, when I look at my parlays and teasers and all that kind of stuff as well, that actually tips the scales favoring Alabama in terms of the actual money I've taken. But the straight bets is way one-sided on Washington. So, you know, you do generally get the feeling that, you know, your public bettors are more the kind of guys who are going to play parlays and teasers. And that's why, you know, Alabama has that much more action on the dollar volume I've got. So it's, you know, I think this is a, you know, as crystal clear as you get in terms of a sharp public split with the public backing Alabama and the sharps, you know, like I said, I got 3 different guys on Washington. That's very strong. Just touching on the total right now, we're sitting at 53 on this one. I did take, you know, sharp action early on the week on this one on the under 58, so we're all the way down to 53. So quite a move there in terms of the total. No surprise that my actual number of bets I've taken does favor the over, but I've got a whole lot more money on the under because of the sharp action that came in. But the side, I like that we're going to need Washington, and I like that we're, you know, going to be needing the side that the sharps are on as well.
Well, I mean, this is a game that we could spend an entire segment talking about because there's just so much packed into it. And there are a couple of points I want to raise here and I want to talk with you about. The first one is that this is a number that opened in that 14 type of range. 14.5, I think, was pretty much the opener at most places. And it did get pushed up all the way to 17.5 on the early action, which, of course, we assume to be sharp because a lot of public players aren't going to play 4 or 5 weeks out in advance of this game. So when you talk about that, how did this whole thing play out? I mean, was that sharp action at the beginning, and then now as limits are higher, guys are coming back the other way?
Hey, it's interesting. Like, if you look back at the opening number of like 14.5 and 15, it's almost like, you know, we were kind of right to in the first place and should have just hung there. But, you know, sharp guys, I think they sit back and look at these numbers and kind of get a feeling in terms of where they're going to go. Now, you know, some guys won't bet too early because they just don't want to risk, you know, God forbid college football, there's any suspensions around bowl season, because that would be just like out of the norm. But, you know, there's stuff like that they sit back and wait on. Obviously, you know, if there's any injury information, stuff like that, they're gonna sit on. And it could be just a situation where guys are sitting there saying, look, you know, I think this number is going to get run up by the public, which it did, and I'm going to come back and get a better number. Now, the first, you know, real pseudo sharp bet that I did take, like I said, was 15.5, and it would drop back down. I think kind of, you know, people might have got spooked in terms of, okay, this thing might make a run the other way. So grabbing the 14.5, you know, getting it in at 14.5 and 14 before it dropped below was kind of key for them. So again, it's tough. Like, you can't jump into the mind of a guy and say, you know, why did he make this bet? But it does kind of make sense in that guys might have been sitting back thinking the public is going to run this number up, and they're going to grab as much value as they can with Washington.
And then the other question about this one, obviously, is in terms of futures exposure, because Alabama, you know, I mean, they were chalk to win the national championship, but they take a lot of money every single year. Ohio State and Clemson had to take a lot of money as well. And Washington was a team, you know, that we were talking about at the end of last season. And we were saying, you know, hey, they got this young quarterback in Jake Browning. They got a great head coach in Chris Peterson. This is a Washington team that's ready to take the next step. So I have to feel like in terms of futures exposure, all four of these teams aren't sitting very well for the books right now.
No, they're not. I mean, honestly, because of the line and the dollar volume that we've taken, I think like Oklahoma is probably like the best case scenario for us right now. The price on Clemson was higher, and we took more money on them. The price on Washington, we probably took slightly less money on Washington, but the price on them was obviously, you know, quite a bit higher. You know, in terms of dollar volume, we've got way, you know, a whole lot more money on Alabama, but when you look at the prices they're getting and stuff like that, it's not something that's going to hurt us too bad, just because, you know, the line I don't think was ever than like plus 600, I think was might have been, you know, as high as that number had gotten. But, you know, when you take a look at it, like Washington, they were like 40-1, 30-1, stuff like that. So there's some big prices on Washington. So yeah, it's not, you know, we're not sitting in a great spot this, but I mean, we did take a real, you know, a lot of money on LSU. We took a lot of money on your, you know, traditional schools like Florida State, Michigan, Auburn, stuff like that. So, you know, we're in a decent spot in terms of the futures. I think we'll be okay. But, you know, right now it does look like, based on the lines and the dollar loan that you took, that Oklahoma State is probably like the best situation, or Ohio State, sorry, is the best spot for us right now.
Well, that's a game I'm surprised we haven't seen any sharp movement on, is that Ohio State Clemson game. I'm kind of just waiting and waiting and waiting for sharp players to jump on that Clemson at the 3. Are they expecting public action to drive up 3.5? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, right now we're sitting like 3-15 right now, and like the only kind of respectable money that we did see come in did come on, you know, Clemson plus the 3.5. In terms of like the heavier bets that have come in, you know, the bigger bets, you know, a couple $1,000, not, you know, just like, you know, we're talking like $5,000-$10,000 bets have all been on Clemson. So the heavier hitters are definitely on Clemson. So I don't think that number is going to climb up at all. You know, we're pretty split in terms of the actual number of straight bets we've taken on that game as well. So I've got good two-way action with the number, and it just seems like it's not going to climb any higher.
Well, before we transition over to the NFL here, and of course we'll have one more college game to talk about with the national championship game, but on the whole, overall, is there anything surprising or maybe unique that you've seen for this college football season that, you know, something that you're going to want to keep in mind for next year?
Honestly, not really. It's, I mean, the bowl season is one of those things where you get so many different matchups that you don't typically see. It's really kind of tough in terms of predicting where stuff is going to go and where people are going to go. And sometimes, you know, you always kind of try and want to anticipate, you know, where people are going to bet and what the sharp guys are going to look for, and kind of, you know, judge your numbers accordingly. And I think like this Washington-Alabama game is a classic example. I mean, we threw 14.5, 15 up there, and it kind of seemed like, you know, that's a good number, because you get a feeling that Washington was going to be the sharp side, but you just knew the money was going to come on Alabama. So, you know, it varies so much year to year. You know, in a place like us as well, you just always know you're going to get, you know, guys betting the over in terms of the public betting the over, and sharp guys generally going to bet the under and stuff like that. So those are just kind of some general rules that kind of guide you as we go through this.
Well, we'll flip over to the NFL side here. Week 17 of the regular season, tons of stuff going on. Some games matter, some games really don't. You're trying to gauge motivation. As I've talked about a few times throughout the week here on Bang the Book Radio, it's, in some respects, it's kind of like a preseason week where coaches are telling you what's going to happen. You kind of have to read between the lines, look at some of those quotes to see how invested some of these teams will be. But we're seeing a lot of line movement here this week based on players being out, based on teams playing for this or playing for that. So we do have a few NFL games here to discuss. We'll start with the only total, though, that you sent over to me here. Buffalo and the New York Jets. What a odd situation for this game.
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo especially is a situation. I mean, yeah, the Jets are, you know, they're sitting at 4-11. Obviously, their season's kind of, you know, been a wash. I mean, they weren't in it from the get-go. And Buffalo, you know, firing their coach and stuff, and then their coordinator and stuff like that. So it's a bit of a mess right there. Their quarterback too. I mean, Taylor's not going to start. They're going to have a look at EJ Manuel and stuff like that. So it is a kind of a messy spot. And then, I mean, you want to throw another, you know, mix in there as well. It could be, you know, talk about weather. It could be cold. It could be this. Could be that. So yeah, it's that time of year. It's kind of, oh boy, you throw the best number up you can, and obviously what we can do is have lower limits, and we definitely do that on some games. I mean, there are some games, you know, you don't know how long guys are going to play and stuff like that, and coaches maybe haven't tipped their hand. Some teams are going to be, you know, especially with the afternoon game, some guys are going to be, you know, motivated or unmotivated based on early results and stuff like that. So this is a game in Buffalo where I've got that, you know, the Bills is a 3.5-point road favorite. We're actually 3.5 minus 115. I'm taking a lot more money on the side, almost like 6-1 for the actual number of bets I've taken favoring the Bills. So they, you know, obviously Emmanuel's going to go out there trying to win this game and look good for Buffalo, that's for sure. But the total is where we did take the sharp action. Probably, you know, maybe no surprise that the sharp action came on the under on this one. That was under 45. Now we've dropped this number all the way down to 42.5, and just that one big, you know, sharp bet that came in, and we just kind of moved down a little bit, you know, a little bit at a time. We actually had gone all the way down to, I think 42 is as low as we had got before we got kind of a, you know, respectable bet back. So we're back up to 42.5, but wager count favors the over almost like 2-1 in terms of public betting the over. No surprise there, as we always talk about, but sharp action on the under for sure. And again, I mean, the Jets, their offense hasn't looked good. Buffalo's decent, you know, or respectable in terms of their offense and defense. And the interesting, you know, kind of wild card in this is obviously you got quarterbacks who are going to be playing for jobs and stuff like that, so it is what it is, but the under was where the sharp money came at him.
Well, move to an AFC North rivalry game here. Again, neither one of these teams really playing for anything but pride this week. That's Baltimore and Cincinnati, but we do have some sharp action on the side here.
Yeah, it's, you know, the sharp guys are going to find value wherever they can find value, and if they think, you know, they've got a better read on a game than we do or whatever, they're certainly going to jump on it. Baltimore sitting there, you know, kind of disappointed that they didn't win last week, of course, and Cincinnati, they've had just a tough year and some I don't want to make a, you know, joke about injuries, but bad breaks perhaps with Cincinnati sitting at 5-9, definitely disappointment for them. But I do have sharp action involved in this game, and that came in on Baltimore plus the 2. We're all the way down to a pick right now, and again, you know, even, you know, the public money seems to be coming on Baltimore as well. Just the general feeling, I guess, that they're a better team. And of course, AJ Green was held out last week, even though they kind of said that he was going to play all week long. They said Green was going to play. It looks like he's going to sit out the last two games of the season, so he won't be in there. And yeah, just not a whole lot to play for the, you know, the Bengals, other than pride, of course. But sharp money came in on Baltimore plus the 2. My wager count's almost 3-1 in terms of the actual, you know, number of bets I've taken. My money, you know, slightly favors Baltimore, so I've got some bets back the other way. But, you know, the situation too, when you look at games, you know, talking about parties and teasers and stuff like that, when games are, you know, pick and stuff like that, you usually get good, you know, decent teaser action both ways. You know, people like to do with like the 6.5 and 7-point teaser, and, you know, either side they're teasing, they're going to get like plus 7 or plus 6.5. So people do, you know, tend to do that quite a bit. So that could be, you know, why my chart in terms of the parlays and teasers and straight bets altogether isn't way off, but I definitely do have a lot more money towards Baltimore, and the sharps are Baltimore plus the 2. Just looking at the total here, we're sitting at 41.5. Wager count's almost like 6-1 favoring the over as the public money has come in.
What's a guy like AJ Green worth to a line?
You know, the thing is, he's been injured for so long, so it's kind of like, you know, we adjust, you know, kind of, you know, you put lower limits on the game as they first come out. I mean, Green himself, you're probably not going to move a whole lot, you know, and just maybe like a point and a half for sure, because, I mean, he is such a big weapon for them, of course. But, you know, you always, when the injury first happens, you kind of want to overreact and put a lower limit on it, and then see how the guys who kind of fill in for him do. Now, and again, it's going to, you know, depend on the situation and the game, stuff like that. Like, it's not just blanket, like, you know, if Cincinnati's on the road playing New England, the line move's going to be, you know, the adjustment because of him is going to be the same as if they were, say, at home playing Cleveland.
Oh, the poor Browns. Well, Chicago and Minnesota here. We got some sharp line movement on this game, and to me, this sharp line movement is a little bit surprising just because, you know, we've seen a Bears team that's played pretty hard over the last several weeks.
Yeah, I mean, last week, too, I mean, the Bears, you know, they didn't win, obviously, but they kind of look like they, you know, they had some life to them, and they, you know, that it was a possibility that if they didn't have so many turnovers, they would have been okay last week. We all, you know, we did get sharp action on them last week as well, but I mean, Barkley basically took care of that himself with his performance. I think he threw like five picks or something like that. So it's, you know, it's pretty tough to win games in that situation. But yeah, this could be, you know, one of those, you know, Minnesota, you know, wanting to close out the, you know, the season on a high note. I mean, they're obviously disappointed having lost a couple games in a row. But yeah, I did take sharp money on this one, and it came at 5.5, so Minnesota at home -5.5. That line's all the way up to 6.5 right now. You know, I've got a little bit of money both ways. My wager count does favor Minnesota, almost like 2-1. My money definitely favors them as well. So, you know, kind of like public and sharp money getting behind it. But the sharp money that came in on this one was on the on the 5.5 on Minnesota. Like I said, we're up to 6.5 right now. I've started to get some money back at the 6.5, so this might drop down. Not sure. I mean, until the chart kind of balances up in terms of dollar volume. But the only money, you know, serious money I've got back at Chicago hasn't come until we went to the 6.5. My total, almost 2.5-1, almost 3-1 in terms of the actual number of bets I've taken favoring the over. We're sitting at 42.5 right now, and that line did open up like 41. But it's not sharp money involved on the total at all. Just kind of, you know, generally people firing away in a couple dime bets at a time from the 41 to 41.5 up to 42.5 is where we are now. No dribbles really on the under so far. So 42.5 on this one, 6.5 Minnesota home favorite, but the sharp money was 5.5, Adam.
This game's really intriguing between Carolina and Tampa Bay because this is a number that opened on Christmas Day at 3.5. It went all the way up to 6.5, and then now it's come back down here today on Thursday.
Yeah, this Carolina is all the way down to 4.5 right now. I'm just looking at the, you know, the line movement in this one. Yeah, we opened up around, what was it, like 5, I think, is where we opened up, and that number, you know, did go all the way up to 6.5 now. I did take sharp action on this one, and that money came in on Carolina at the +6. So that's where the sharp money came on this one. Right now we have Tampa Bay as a 4.5-point home favorite to Carolina, total of 46 there. But looking at the sharp action that I've taken and the big bets, just nothing but one-sided action in terms of Carolina. Now, like I said, the sharpest action that came in on this one was Carolina +6. That's the +6 -05, so that's worth noting. My wager count in terms of the actual number of bets I have on the game, almost dead even, so that could be really why the line kind of went up. I just more public money driving the number up from the 4.5 until it got to like 6 and 6.5, and the sharps, you know, grabbed that money coming back. So right now in terms of my actual money, almost like 3 times as much more money on Carolina, but my wager count just slightly, ever so slightly, favors Tampa Bay.
We'll move back to the AFC North here. We already touched on Baltimore and Cincinnati. We've got a sharp grab here in this Cleveland-Pittsburgh game. And from what it looks like to me, this was purely a numbers grab based on the assumption that Roethlisberger, Brown, and Le'Veon Bell were all going to sit this game out.
Yeah, I mean, probably. It's just so tough because sometimes, you know, you get inside the mind of a coach in terms of how long he wants to throw people out there, whether he wants to throw them out there at all. Just, you know, because sometimes you just want to keep your momentum going and you want to, you know, get the, you know, keep the, what are they, grease the groove is kind of an expression we use in the weight room. You want to, you know, keep things going in terms of how you're feeling. So you want to have guys out there still, like, sitting out, the entire week and not getting the game action. You want to have them out there, you know, as a team. But yeah, this could be one of those spots. I mean, judging by the line movement right now, Cleveland +9.5 was sharp action. I mean, so, you know, they're coming off that that big win last week, you know, their first win of the season and stuff like that. And we did have sharp money last week on Cleveland, probably just kind of out of motivation that was kind of like a game that, you know, the sharp guys did figure they could probably win. And they did, you know, thanks to a couple of missed field goals on San Diego's part. But this one, yeah, you might be right. It's just more of a numbers play in terms of who's going out there for Pittsburgh and who's not going to be out there. Interesting enough, though, is my wager count on this one is almost 6-1 favoring Pittsburgh. So regardless of that situation, I've just got a ton of public money on Pittsburgh. When I look at my money, it's almost like 2-3-1 favoring Pittsburgh as well. But the sharp money was clearly on Cleveland +9.5. I'm looking at the total as well. We're sitting at that 43 right now. I haven't really taken any sharp money on the total at all, but I've just got, you know, a lot of, you know, dribbles coming in on the under. They started with the under 45, I think, is where the money first started coming in. Nothing but under money coming all the way down to where we are now at 43. But the sharp action so far was Cleveland +9.5.
One more game here where we've got some well-defined sharp action, and then a couple of games where we got some two-way action that we'll discuss. But Atlanta, the Atlanta Falcons take on the New Orleans Saints. Atlanta obviously has something to play for here. They can lock up the number two seed and a bye in the first round of the playoffs. So seems to be a motivating factor here in terms of where the money's coming in.
Yeah, and I think kind of Atlanta just doesn't mind beating up on the Saints if they can do it. So that would be part of it as well. I mean, if there's a mean nothing game, I think Atlanta would really, you know, enjoy beating New Orleans, that's for sure. Atlanta right now, you know, quite a, you know, significant line move in the fact that Atlanta right now is a -7, -120 favorite at home. The sharp action that we took on Atlanta did come at -6.5. So -6.5, -115 actually is where the money came in on Atlanta. So I got sharp action there. So we kind of, you know, a lot of times when you take money at -6.5, -15, you go to like 7 flat, but we went straight to 7, -15 and continue to get money on Atlanta. We're 7, -120 right now. I think we'd probably go like another 5 cents before we broke the number to 7.5. You kind of don't want to do that going from 6.5 to 7.5, but it's something we might have to do. I do have almost like 3 times as many bets on the Falcons as well. So money's very one-sided in terms of the number of bets I've taken on Atlanta, and the wager count as well favors them. My total action, you know, is all public money on the over, but it did start coming in on the over 55. We're sitting at 56 right now, but almost like 5-1, the actual number of bets I've taken favoring the over, no surprise. My money's about the same thing, about 4-1 favoring the over. So I got some nibbles when it was at 56 back on the under, so we're sitting at that at 56 still, just because I haven't got enough back, but at 55 is where, so it's kind of bouncing between those two numbers. I know people generally like to bet the Saints games over, so I wouldn't be surprised if that trend continued, but sharp action was on the Falcons, like I said, -6.5, Adam.
In terms of going up to 7.5, do you need another sharp hit on that, or can public volume be enough to do that?
Public volume can definitely be enough, because we talk about, you know, public bets, and oftentimes I refer to the public bets, and you're talking about, you just think a lot of smaller bets, like maybe, you know, $250, $500 bets to kind of pound away at a number, and you don't really, you know, move the number based on those bets. But there's also a lot of guys who just have deep pockets, and they'll fire, you know, five or ten time bet on a game like that, even though they're not, you know, particularly sharp, but they were, you know, were sharp in some aspect of their life to be able to bet 10 dimes on a game for sure. So there's guys definitely like that who may not be considered sharp or wise guys per se, but have deep pockets and will fire out, you know, a max limit bet on you. So, you know, you have to kind of, you know, gauge where you think action might come. I mean, this is definitely a spot where you don't want to be one-sided on the Falcons and, you know, sitting at 7 and just sitting there hoping that money comes back on the Saints that never comes back. So if you got to move, you got to move. Like I said, the next move for us is definitely going to be 7-1/4 if we have to, and it kind of looks like it's going to go that way. And again, a lot of times you've got guys who are, you know, are just going to wait until the day of the game, and then they're going to fire. So Saints money may come in at that point in time, but you just never know.
We're going to have to talk about this once we get into next year. I don't want to do it here at the end of the season because I don't know how much value it actually has. But, you know, in terms of the value for you guys, the odds makers and the sports books, in going from -120 to -125, I think a lot of our listeners would probably want some clarification on that for next year, because it seems like it's such an innocent and really, you know, I'm sure some people would even call it an irrelevant move to just raise the juice by 5 cents. So I think that's, you know, something that we'll have to write down and remember for next season. And if you want to say anything quickly on it now, you certainly can.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely it's something that the sharp guys might appreciate a little bit more. I mean, you know, it's, you really have to look at these things in terms of the long term, especially with these sharp guys, in terms of what the winning percentage and what a 5 cent move means to them in terms of, you know, the value. It's like, what percentage am I, you know, my chance of winning this game? You know, if I'm thinking I'm going to get, you know, win 57%, 57.5% over the long term, what difference does it make to me a 5 cent move? Well, it does, because it changes your, you know, your win percentage. But that's something that, yeah, I mean, it is, you know, a much deeper and longer conversation in terms of knowing, like, especially with money lines, like, if you need, you know, it's important for people to know, you know, as a -400 favorite, what that means, you know, in terms of your actual win percentage. You're expecting a team to win how many times out of 10, you know, or out of 100 and stuff like that. So this, it kind of gets down to math, basically. And also, too, like, what it means to us in terms of, like, this number in particular, because of the number. Like if we had opened at -7, minus, you know, 120, or even -7, and then we went to 120, we'd probably be more likely to move to 7.5 because we weren't at 6.5 before. So, you know, your starting point in terms of that number is very, very relevant in terms of the fact that we started at 6.5 with Atlanta, and how often does a game land 7 in the NFL? So you really want to, on 3 and 7, you want to hold those numbers as long as you can, and especially if you start at 6.5. If you start at 7, you're not, you know, you're a little more, it's an easier move to go to 7.5 for sure, because you're not at risk of getting, you know, middle ball. If the game lands 7, you're just perhaps pushing one side and painting the other side.
Well, and I imagine that maybe this is something we could talk about during the NFL playoffs, because a lot of those numbers tend to hover around key numbers where you are moving as opposed to moving to half points and stuff. So maybe that's something we can touch on next week for the divisional round. A couple of games with two-way action here, beginning with Washington and the New York Giants. Two very different sets of motivation here. Washington, everything to play for. Giants, nothing to play for because they're already locked into their spot. So what's the story on this game?
Yeah, I did want to mention this game just because we do have two-way action on this one. We got sharp action, and you know, these are the sharp guys who what I'll call list guys. We did take sharp action on the Giants +8, and also on Washington -7, -115. So I think this is a number, you know, if that trend continues, you're going to see bounce back and forth between the, you know, the -7 in juice to the -7.5 with Washington. You go back both ways. And again, you know, a lot of people might say 7.5 and 8, what's the difference? Well, it's, you know, when a game lands 8, then you find out what the difference is, you know. So, you know, every half point does have some value, but I did get, you know, very sharp action both ways. Again, it was +8. I actually got a couple bets on +8 from sharp guys, and also the -7 on Washington. So sharp action both ways on this game. I just kind of wanted to mention that because, you know, the people who did bet it were, you know, very sharp on both sides of it. So I got, you know, -7, -15, and -7 on Washington. That's the last bet came at -7, which drove it back up to 7.5. And again, I got a couple of sharps back the other way. So it's nice in that I got two sharp guys telling me, you know, 7 is a good play on Washington. I got two sharp guys saying 8's a good play on the Giants. So this number seems like it's going to work for us.
And then there's one here where you're certainly hoping that this game doesn't fall 7 between New England and Miami. You've got money on New England below the key number, money on Miami after the number climbed. So this is a spot where things could get a little bit dicey for you on Sunday.
Yeah, it's not a good spot for us. I mean, you hate to be in a position that we are, but it happens sometimes. You just, you know, you have to gauge in terms of, you know, how much people are going to, you know, respect the number in terms of like the 6.5 and blow through the 7 and stuff like that, and how high that's going to go before you've got to get money back. And, you know, again, it's like sharps kind of have a good feel in terms of where numbers are going both ways and stuff like that. And again, you know, we did have sharp action, like I said, very sharp action on the Pats at the -6.5, very sharp action on Miami +10, as you mentioned. And it's a situation where maybe, you know, the guy who took who laid the 6.5 is not a guy who's you know, just going for a numbers grab, who's going to play back the other side. And the guy who took the 10 is not the type of guy who's going to take, you know, lay the number the other way. So these are our plays where, based on the number, they, you know, they like that side. Like, people always ask me, they talk about a game, you know, you say, hey, New England and Miami, who do you like? And the question is, well, what's the number? And I'll tell you who I like, right? So at 10, the sharps like Miami. At 6.5, the sharps like New England. So it's definitely, you know, a spot for us where, you know, 7, 9, anything like that is not great for us. And even 10 won't be, you know, a good spot for us. But this is one of those games where you kind of hope for a blowout one way or the other.
Well, Brett, I know we covered a lot of stuff here, and I know that you are extremely busy, of course, college basketball with conference play going on now. Huge weekend coming up for that as well. There's some big games here on Saturday. So as always, man, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, and hope you close out 2016 on a high note, and best wishes to you and your family for 2017 as well.
Thanks, Adam. All the best.
There you go. There is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. That'll wrap up 2016 for us here on Bang the Book Radio. Coming up on Monday, Joe Everett with our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview segment. Obviously, we don't have a Monday Night Football game to preview, but we will preview the wild card round, excuse me, of the NFL playoffs. And I'll also be joined by Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. We'll look at the Sugar Bowl, National Championship game, and then our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. So that'll do it. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, smart, safe weekend. I will talk to you again on Monday.